National Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 3:32 p.m. on Tuesday, February 11, 2014. We're in the Butrovich Room 205. Let the record show we have a quorum to do business. Present, we have Senator Geisel, Vice Chair, Senator Egan, Senator Bishop, and myself, Chairman Michicki. Also like to note the presence of Senator Olson in the audience. Welcome, Senator. Like to recognize our committee staff as well, Christopher Dickrell from Senate Records, and LAO staff Alex B.B. Judiche. Okay, good. Like to remind everyone to please turn off your cell phones. And purpose of our meeting today is to hear Senate Bill 98, an act relating to Department of Public Safety regulations allowing village public safety officers to carry firearms. This is sponsored by Senator Olson, who's present again, and this is our first hearing on the bill. It's my intent to not pass the bill out today. We'll begin taking public testimony and committee discussion. The bill will be back before the committee on Thursday. So David Scott, staff to Senator Olson, will be presenting the bill on his behalf. Please join us, introduce yourself, and present the bill. And for the record, at 3:34, I want to also note the presence of Senator Hoffman. Welcome, Senator.
Thanks. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for hearing this bill. In honor of members of the Committee on Regional Affairs, I especially thank you for listening to this very important bill. And part of the reason I brought it forward is because over the last several years, as we've seen our society become more and more violent, there's been more and more violence against public safety officers, village public safety officers in particular. We've had two deaths now down in the Bristol Bay area, area that's outside of my district. However, in my district, which is District T, we've had two bouts with a gun that was out there severely injuring a couple of VPSOs that were there, and so that's the reason I feel like this is about time that we bring this bill forward in order to go ahead and try and remedy the situation where we have people on the front lines with little backup, have them have the ability to go ahead and protect themselves, defend themselves, as well as members of the community. At this point, what we do have in regulation or in the department is a prohibition against village public safety officers having and carrying firearms. What this bill does is takes away the prohibition, and it's up to the individual nonprofits, or except for the Kotzebue area, for that borough to go ahead and allow their village public safety officers to go ahead and carry it if they so wish. And all this bill does is takes away the prohibition. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like David Scott, my chief of staff, to go ahead and present the details of the bill at this time.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm David Scott, staff to Senator Olson. SB 98 clearly establishes the legislature's intent that VPSOs, village public safety officers, be allowed to carry firearms. As the bill is written, VPSOs would have to meet satisfactory training requirements. Since SB 98 was introduced during last legislative session in 2013, the Department of Public Safety has drafted regulations to allow properly trained VPSOs to carry firearms while on duty. The regulations also detail training and oversight requirements. Those regulations are in the members' packets. Passage of SB 98 will make the state's support of this policy clear and unambiguous. In March last year, there was a horrible incident where an unarmed VPSO in Manicotic was shot and killed. And it left a lot of folks very disturbed, not only in the area, but I think around the state. Horrible incident was also, a reminder of the 1986 slaying of another VPSO in Naknek in the Bristol Bay region. VPSOs often work without backup in remote locations where a call to state troopers can mean hours, even days before backup if weather is bad. The sponsor feels it's just not reasonable to continue to ask VPSOs to walk unarmed into situations that pose obvious personal danger. And the sponsor, it's also the sponsor's hope that arming these first responders will have a deterrent effect and makes not just the officers but the whole community safer. It's also important to note that neither SB 98 or the new regulations require but require VPSOs to be armed. While the state funds VPSO program and DPS provides officers training and administrative support, it's Alaska's regional Native associations that hire the VPSOs and work with the communities where they are posted. The wishes of individual communities must be respected, and everyone involved must have a thorough understanding of the issues surrounding these officers, which is why it's not it's not mandatory language inside the bill. One last note, I'd like to go before any questions, Mr. Chairman, is that late last week, the center's office and the sponsor and the other body's office, we learned that a VPSO program oversight issue that the department is in the process of rectifying. They'll address it. So we'd like to bring up Colonel Cockrell, who oversees the program, or an informed committee about this issue. Also today, we expect Deputy Commissioner Vaivak to provide detailed information about the weapons training program that the department will administer. With that, Mr. Chairman, I could try to answer any other questions, but there are a lot of folks from DPS in the room, also in the next room. If I can answer any questions about the mechanics of the bill, I'm available.
I have one question before I ask the rest of the committee, Mr. Scott. And if you're not prepared to do this today, perhaps we could at the next meeting. But could you tell me about the work session stakeholder meeting, just a summary of sort of discovery from that meeting?
Mr. Chairman, that's a good question. I have everything. Has it been in your packet? I listened to about half of the meeting. And I've also read what was put together by the sponsor of the companion bill in his office over on the other side. I can't really
I don't want to
consolidate that right now. I could definitely work on that and make a presentation at the next meeting.
All right, if you don't mind, just a summary at the next meeting I think would be helpful. I mean, it's just sort of from the mouths of those that are the most exposed on a daily basis. I think it would be helpful to understand their position.
No problem, Mr. Chairman. I'll work on that.
Thank you. Joining us next, Mr. Vaivak.
Mr. Chairman, if we could have Colonel Cockrell come up first.
Yes, certainly. Welcome, Colonel.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Colonel James Cockrell, Director of the Alaska State Troopers.
And Mr. Chairman and committee members, I'm Terry Vaivak, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety. Commissioner Folger is also with us today.
Thank you. Do you have some testimony or just here for questions?
Mr. Chair, I'm here for two reasons. One, for questions, and then a issue came up that was brought to my attention yesterday that we addressed in a similar hearing in the House side. Reference a current VPSO that has a felony conviction is something that is against the regulations, and kind of wanted to explain kind of the procedures that that we've taken to follow up on the issues. Essentially, like I say, it was brought to my attention yesterday afternoon. I went ahead and pulled the file, the individual person that was the VPSO, and during the file review, it came to my attention that the department gave the nonprofit a waiver to allow this person to be hired as a VPSO. He since went through the training, and basically he was charged under several counts in 1999, and eventually looks like he pled out to an assault 3 in 2000. Looking through the files and all the circumstances, I can understand why one of my members of the department using 13 AAC, there's a provision that allows the commissioner or his designee to give essentially a waiver, even though it doesn't say that. I'm not saying he exactly interpreted the regulation correctly, but he went ahead and provided the nonprofit with the waiver to hire this individual, and the individual is still employed as a VPSO. And I'll be glad to answer any questions on that if I can, but I definitely want it out there and make sure that we're transparent and open with this discovery.
Yes, madam. Co-chair, vice chair.
Thanks. So will you put in place criteria then, psychological testing, clearly background checks? I mean, if you're going to permit weapons to be carried, not that I'm opposed to that, but clearly there's going to have to be more screening and training, right?
Through the chair, first of all, just to give the Department of Public Safety's position on this, we're in favor of arming the VPSOs at this point in time. And certainly there's going to be a process that will be different than unarmed VPSOs, including different sight tests, polygraph, and more training involving strictly firearms training and also the use of force training that would build on their current use of force trainings they're currently getting at the DPS Academy.
Follow-up, Senator Diesel?
Yes, thank you. So the state trooper training happens in Sitka, I believe. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that's correct.
So I understand that the VPSOs go to a part of that training. Could you tell us, if that's incorrect, could you tell us exactly what the VPSO training is, where it's conducted, how comprehensive it is?
Through the chair, if I can pass that question to the deputy commissioner, because he's actually in charge of the DPS Academy.
Thank you, Colonel. Through the chair, Senator, as you're aware, yes, our main training facility is in Sitka. It's the Department of Public Safety Training Academy. We train municipal officers, other state agency officers like park rangers, as well as the state troopers. We're very proud of the academy. It's a very good training program. We also train VPSOs there, and that is a separate academy. Yes, they're at the academy, and they get something similar. I'll give you an example, like defensive tactics. Everyone's going to get that. But VPSOs do a lot more than some of the traditional law enforcement. You know, they also get extensive fire training, search and rescue, more medical. But they're there for a good 10 weeks at one time, and then there's another two-week fire training academy. So they're about 12 weeks of training just from our academy. Compared to the Municipal Academy, which is more traditional law enforcement, that is a 15 to 18 week academy, depending on what type of officer you are at. That's almost a 900 hour academy. It's 900 plus hours. I think the VPSO Academy, if I'm not mistaken, Colonel, it's 600 plus, I believe, isn't it, currently right now? In reference to this bill, as Colonel mentioned, we have been in support of it. If this was something to be passed into legislation, I have spoken with the training commander. As of last week, we had a long discussion on this bill, if it was to come into place. And we do have a very good training program that would be offered to the respective VPSOs that would be supported by their nonprofits as well as their communities. To go through the training, and it does include, it's more than just the use of a firearm. There's a lot of training that goes into when we teach someone that's going to be carrying a weapon. In fact, a lot of times it's almost, and I'll use the term, when not to shoot. You know, we train you because sometimes there's when we talk about use of deadly force, there's a continuum from the moment I may lay a hand on someone if I was placing them under arrest up to the various tools that we have that an officer or trooper may have on their belt, so to say. And so there's a lot of training besides just the range training that an officer must meet. And we are very adamant that just as we would for city officers or state troopers, the VPSOs would be no different. To be qualified to carry a firearm, you must pass this training. There will be no rubber stamp certification saying just because you want to, you're going to be allowed to. We take that very seriously, and the use of deadly force is very important to us. So even though we have not designed the actual program yet, since this has not passed yet, but my commander is very adamant that he and his staff can develop a good, safe program for us.
Thank you.
Other questions? Yes, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is the Sitka Academy the only academy that individuals can receive firearm training?
Through the chair, Senator, there are two other academies. Anchorage Police Department on occasion runs a accredited academy, as well as the UAF campus up in Fairbanks has a law enforcement academy. Both of those are also approved by the Alaska Police Standards Council, as well as the Sitka Academy. So basically there's three in the state.
I guess my question is, to save on expense, the existing VPSOs, would they be able to get training in Anchorage since they've already received their other training at the academy in Sitka?
Through the chair, and we could discuss that, but honestly, if you're going to ask me that right now, I'm going to say no, I'd like them to go to Sitka, because some of the equipment and training and staff we have are based out of there. And I think we could actually better train them. Yes, I know there is a cost for travel, but when you stay at the academy, and I don't know if you've ever been there, and if you haven't, please, next time in Sitka, come by. It gives you a neat idea of what we do there. But you stay right there at the academy with the new dining facility that, through the help of the legislature, which, thank you, they can eat there, live there, and train there, and it's a very nice facility for that. So at this point, I would say we'd like them to come to Sitka.
Yes. Senator Egan.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner, so how many hours are you looking at? You say 600 now for the basic VPSO, but this is going to entail a lot more training, I'm assuming.
Through the chair, Senator, yes, you are correct. And have we come up with the magical hour on that one yet? No. We would probably eventually encompass it into the new full academy of the VPSO Academy, but you're talking up to a couple weeks, I would say, of additional training. And we haven't come up with the exact hour on that yet, but you are correct, Senator. There is going to be an additional training.
Thank you.
This is an educational process for me, and I just have a few questions. So the VPSO is not the village police officer. It's the primary village first responder. So you're training them in firefighting and as well as some law enforcement techniques today, right? Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know if you've listened or been able to see part of Captain Arlo's VPSO presentation where he kind of outlined some of that. Part of their duties are law enforcement, but a good portion of their duties are not law enforcement. So, and they do receive a lot of other training. They receive some training that even our police officers don't receive.
In that training, do they receive training for non-lethal solutions as well?
Mr. Chairman, yes, they do. Obviously, it has not involved firearms to this point, but if you look at a VPSO today, if one of the officers was here right now, you'd see that they have several tools on their belt, and they are trained in the use of force continuum, as we would call it, of when they could use that, whether that was, again, whether you were to arrest someone or you were placing them in handcuffs or using a pepper spray device or a taser device. So there's a lot of different tools that one may have, and they do receive training in that.
Okay. And it's a little bit of a struggle because any Alaskan, non-felon Alaskan that can pass a background check can also carry a weapon in the state of Alaska. This is clearly a liability issue for the state. Doesn't mean I don't support it. I just want to get everything sort of out on the table of what we're considering here. But has there ever been action against the state for liability due to an injury or a fatality to an unarmed VPSO being in a bad situation?
Mr. Chairman, I am not aware of that, and I don't know if I... Colonel, any?
through the chair, I don't have any direct knowledge of any lawsuits that we've been involved in that was initiated by VPSO during an arrest or anything. But that doesn't mean there's nothing out there. I just can't answer that question.
Okay. Yes.
Well, just to follow up on that question, Senator Machicki, they're employees of the Native Corporation, not employees of the state. Am I getting that right? So why would the state carry the liability? Can you explain why that might be?
Through the chair, I don't know who the best person to answer that. First of all, when we enter an agreement with the nonprofit, they do sign a release saying that they're responsible. They're responsible for liability, the VPSOs. And I, you know, I'm not an attorney, and I hate to get into answering what our liabilities are or our perceptive reliabilities are, because we're certainly married to the program, because we're providing oversight, we're providing training, but how that puts us into liability of, to their actions, you know, I'm not able to answer that.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman. Yes, sir.
On that issue, I know this has come up in the past, but public safety is the responsibility of the state, and the state is contracting with the nonprofits to provide a service on behalf of the state of Alaska. And I know the issue of liability has come up, and it's one that is, to me, is unanswered. But the fact that these corporations are providing a service on behalf of the state of Alaska at much reduced cost, if a state trooper had to fill that position, is something that the corporations understand and are more than willing to provide.
I mean, I you all have brought up some great points. It's clear when people go into the courtroom, and I didn't ask if they were successful. I asked if there had been a suit. They go for the deepest pockets that are even peripherally affected in the case. So I was just wondering if that was one of the considerations on going forward. But great points. Any other questions for Mr. Vrabeck or Mr. Cockrell? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I would be very interested, and I don't know how long the presentation of Captain Arlo's is, but we will be hearing this bill again on Thursday, and if possible, I don't know the length of the play time for that. I would love to see the presentation. I think it'd be good for the public to see as well.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask our legislative assistant, because if you haven't seen it, if we can get you a copy of that, and that would give you some reading ahead of time. It's a very informative presentation, and then we'll see what is. I believe Captain Arlo is still in town with us, and we'll see what his schedule is if we can fit that in. It can go long, but we can abbreviate it and get you some information on it. I think it'd be very informative for you.
I think so. Thank you very much, Deputy Commissioner Vrabeck. Mr. Scott, did you have any others before we take public testimony that, okay. Okay. Oh, yes, Senator Bishop.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just have one question for the commissioner. If he'd like to, if it'd be all right, if you could call the commissioner.
Absolutely. If you can please state your name for the record.
My first name is Gary. Last name is Fulcher, F-O-L-G-E-R.
Thank you, Commissioner. Welcome and glad to see you. Good to see you here today. I just want to read a quote from Commissioner Masters from the meeting this summer. I think it was in September in Anchorage. Commissioner Masters said he was offended by the suggestions that the character and quality of VPSOs is such that they can't safely be allowed to carry firearms in the course of their duties. And would you concur with that statement as well, or something of that along those lines?
Through the chair, I do.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Senator Bishop. It's a good point. Okay, with that, I'm going to open public testimony, and I can't remember if I'm supposed to gavel into public testimony, but we'll do it for fun anyway. And I'm going to, we have six here. I'll give 3 minutes apiece, and we're going to begin with the Fairbanks LIO. We have folks online and ready to go. Okay, let's start with Ms. Potts. You have 3 minutes.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the state for recognizing the need that the VPSOs have currently, and specifically Senator Olson for bringing this legislation forward. As it has already been stated, there's been such an increase in the level of violent crime and officer assaults, and I think that this is really important. And I, as a VPSO, as someone who grew up in a village, and as a current employer of VPSOs, as the VPSO coordinator for TANDA Chiefs Conference, I favor this legislation, as I see it is very necessary for our officers' safety. But I do have a couple of reservations concerning this, and one of them is the screening process. Currently, VPSOs, as you know, are not armed, and they go through just a very basic criminal background check, and then an interview by the nonprofit, and then we decide on whether or not to employ them. I would like to see the standards raised, and that has been my number one concern, and the liability that the nonprofits would then encounter should there be an excessive force issue in the future, because there was not a mental fitness standard or screening process or physical fitness standard screening process. I do have full faith in the training that the Alaska State Troopers and Department of Public Safety would put us through, having gone through the academy. It is a very high-quality training that prepares us for the work that we do out in the field. There's a lot that's expected of VPSOs, and I believe that this will further the quality and possibilities for rural Alaskans and their public safety measures. So, again, I want to thank the state for looking at this. And having been an officer in the field and as a coordinator now, if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer any.
Questions for Ms. Potts from the committee? I see no questions, but very much appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Next, let's stay in Fairbanks, is Ann Sears. Oh, hell. No, I like to kind of change things up a little bit. Nice to have you here.
Thank you. And thanks for the opportunity to speak. Mr. Chairman, my name is Ann Sears. I am a state trooper, but I am here representing the Public Safety Employees Association, our union. I've been a trooper for 13 years, and I spent 11 years in the bush, 7 in Nome and then 4 in Galena, and I've had the privilege of working with VPSOs in each of those communities, as well as being an oversight for those 11 years. I'm speaking to the committee in support. I've got a written statement here because it was much easier for me. I'm speaking in support of not only the training of armed VPSOs to the standard of other certified police officers, but the rigorous background and psychological vetting, and I put vetting in quotations, that should accompany the training of an armed VPSO. Being a certified police officer is an incredible responsibility. I carry a gun and a badge, and I'm authorized to shoot in defense of the life of others and of myself. It is a responsibility I assume every day when I go to work, and I do not take lightly. I did go through 1 week of handgun training when I was at the academy. It was a week of intense training, but it wasn't only just the 1 week. During the entire academy, which when I went through for the troopers was 17 weeks, I think, altogether, back in 2001. During the entire academy, the use of force continuum was emphasized from a certified police officer's mere presence, which is at the, you know, the low end of the use of force continuum, through the use of deadly force. It was reemphasized with scenarios, not just 1 week of handgun training, but every week. We were shown, lectured about, and listened to audio about shoot and don't shoot real life situations, which we may encounter as troopers and police officers every day. Not only the 1 week of handgun training and then the everyday emphasis of use of force, we also went through defensive tactics. And that's not just, you know, defense of ourselves, defense of others, but also weapon retention, learning how to hold on to our weapons, regain our weapons if ever in the chance came that we did lose our weapons. And as you all know, we did lose a police officer in Kenai who was shot with his own weapon, and I think it was 5-6 years ago. After the academy, I had 14 weeks of field training. That field training is with an experienced certified police officer. I was exposed daily to stressful, sometimes potential lethal situations. I had the benefit, even after field training, of having those experienced officers not only to back me up, but debrief after high-risk calls. I was exposed to all... Was that my 3 minutes?
Oh, no, don't
I'm almost
that.
Done.
That's okay. You're close enough.
Thank you, sir. And now, after 13 years of being a trooper, I have the benefit of working side-by-side with other men and women who have had the same training at the academy as I had, the same field training as I had after the academy, and can trust their decision-making because of their training and their experience. If VPSOs are armed, they need to be afforded the same training and experiences as I and other fellow certified police officers have received. In order to bear the responsibility of the use of deadly force, they need the same intense background investigation and training as any other certified police officer. That is what we should expect of our VPSOs if we arm them. The training and experience in order to bear the responsibility of the use of deadly force. With the same background and training as any other certified police officer, we can reasonably trust we are safe, that they are safe, and that the public that they serve and we serve are safe as well. If we don't give the VPSOs the training and experience they are entitled to, the state and corporations expose themselves to liabilities in a case of wrongful death or even injury because of their actions. I feel that if, you know, we train the VPSOs, you know, give them their arms, and we train the VPSOs to use those handguns, I think the state does bear a responsibility, not just the nonprofits that hire them, you know, in their different regions.
Ms. Sears.
Yes, sir.
You're roughly double over your time limit.
Am I? Okay. I have just a couple of other things here. Certified police officer bears a heavy burden or a heavy responsibility every day. We go to work, we bear the awesome responsibility of life or death. We are vetted, then trained to be able to bear the responsibility. We do not take it lightly. We have, and this is a quotation from one of the folks at the academy that I went through with, we have the intestinal fortitude with which to bear that responsibility.
Thank you, and I also recommend or suggest that you can provide written testimony as well to
certainly
my staff, my office. Any questions for Ms. Sears? Officer Sears? Trooper Sears?
Just Ann Sears today, though.
Ann Sears. Ms. Sears, I just want to give that officer in Kenai a name. He was a good friend. Officer Watson was a good man.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Next on the list, right here in Juneau, not in the room, I don't believe, is, Ms. Kathy Wasserman. I didn't recognize you for some reason back there.
Her wound.
Yes, that's probably part
of it. Reveling as a wounded person. Thank you, Senator Michicki. For the record, my name is Kathy Wasserman. I'm here testifying on behalf of myself. My organization has not taken a committed stand on this yet. We will discuss it next week, though I feel many of them are in support. I just feel so strongly about this bill that I decided to come up and testify on my own. This is the first time I've ever done this. I am fully in support of this bill. Having been the mayor of two remote communities for many, many years that utilized the VPSO program, and also my husband was an instructor at the VPSO Academy back when Commissioner Masters was there. He taught EMS and first aid. and stood in for VPSOs when they were needed in certain places. So I feel I lived with the VPSO program for 25 years or so. I think the program is a wonderful concept, but it has been broken for many years, and one of the reasons is because in a community, a small community, because of the rules that the Alaska has on guns, the VPSO is the only person in town with a stick, and everyone else has a gun. And I cannot imagine the pain of having to constantly, I can imagine, sending some of these young men who are committed to their community, who have a difficult job anyway. They are in charge of sometimes arresting their own cousins. They respond to all the fires. They do the EMS. They have to take care of everything. They're not paid particularly well. And then they're told to go down to a domestic dispute, or in my community, a bunch of, and this is not anything against fishermen, but when you get a bunch of fishermen into town with plenty of money, selling their fish, cash in their pockets, and alcohol on board, and they're firing all over the docks at everyone that walks by, I know I don't want to go down there without a gun.
Ms. Wasserman, I don't see how a fisherman could take offense at that at all. Please continue.
Okay. Anyway, I certainly hope that this bill is passed, and I think it does one other very good thing. It would require the state to increase the training of VPSOs. They do need to increase the training. The VPSOs need more, and I know money is a problem, but I think public safety is one of the main tenets of government. We can let a lot of things go, but protecting the public should not be one of them. So I certainly hope you look favorably on this bill.
Thank you, Ms. Wasserman. Questions for Ms. Wasserman? Thank you.
Thanks.
Next is Joy Huntington, here with the Tanana Chiefs Conference. If you can please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Good afternoon. My name is Joy Huntington, and I work directly with Tanana Chiefs Conference. I'm down here on their behalf. I want to commend Sergeant Potts for her excellent job testifying earlier. She's done a great job and is an amazing role model across the state for young women everywhere, so very proud of her. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators, for listening to our testimony today. I want to commend Senator Olson and his staff for putting this bill forward, and in the other body as well for their work on this bill. We have passed a resolution, which I believe is on the record somewhere, supporting this. And I just want to, you know, very quickly say that in this resolution from our executive board, TCC supports the safety of VPSOs and commends the state of Alaska for recognizing the need for improved safety measures through legislation to arm VPSOs for their safety and the safety of our communities. So this directly supports it. There's a few issues that have come to my attention. You know, not only do we send them out there and they have to deal with all these difficult situations, but also they don't receive state retirement. They have to get retirement from their entity that they're working directly for. But imagine the families of these men and women out there that are putting their lives on the line every day, as we heard earlier. And not only are they not fully protected, if something were to happen to them, their families wouldn't be fully protected either. So there's a lot of good reasons why we need to do our best, you know, to really be there to support them. And I see, you know, the Department of Public Safety here supporting this, and it just makes me very proud. And I want to, you know, talk about the relationship that TCC has developed with the Department of Public Safety. And we meet regularly. You know, it's just been wonderful to work with them and establish that communication. And I really feel that we've really been on the same team in terms of providing public safety and supporting each other, and with limited resources, we really have to work together. And I just want you to, it's hard to see that because you don't see the meetings, but it's been wonderful to develop those relationships. So I just want you to know that we really do work together. I grew up in a village without a public safety officer. And it's just, I can't tell you, as a 13-year-old girl growing up in a community where people at times are under the consumption of alcohol, walking down the street becomes something that you're a little bit afraid of, and you know that there's nobody that you can go to help you. And especially, you know, I heard earlier about having them be armed. That changes the dynamic in the community, because it's not as if they have to use force every day, but for the people that are out there that may have something in mind, they know that's there. And so I'm sure that would alleviate a lot of the concerns. And I just commend the state of Alaska for really supporting this program. program and focusing on it. The governor has backed this up. The Department of Public Safety has as well, and the legislature. So looking at this fiscal note here for $62,000 for this particular legislation, you're directly saving lives and helping people. And to me, that's kind of a no-brainer. You don't get that opportunity every day. So thank you very much, and I look forward to seeing this bill pass through. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Huntington. Questions for Ms. Huntington? Thank you for your testimony. Next, from Palmer, Mr. Mike Coons. Mr. Coons, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am. Yeah, my name is Mike Coons. I'm from Lazy Mountain. I've sent you two letters, and I note that they're in the packet, so I'm not going to belabor those the point too much on those. I totally agree with Trooper Sears, and the kind of the question I've got, and you might want to ask DPS folks that you got there, if the VPSOs are going to start carrying, are they going to get a second chance vest to go with that that will give them a better ability to survive a gunfire exchange type of situation? But what I really want to say, and I'll do it off of my prepared, my major concern is that with arming and added responsibilities and being employed by the nonprofits, corporations, who will make the determination to continue employment, give reprimands, or to fire the VPSO in the event of a weapon's use or misuse? Understand that use can be drawing the weapon to stop an act to firing the weapon. The nonprofit corporation administrative staff that I've seen out at Hooper Bay when I was there as part of the last State Defense Force and an acting VPSO out there, did not have the knowledge nor the training to make value decisions when it comes down to the VPSO doing their job. I've seen this firsthand while at Hooper Bay, where a complaint was filed against us, and our support came only from the commander of the last State Defense Force, then General Westall. So whom will support the VPSO, and whom can that VPSO turn to if fired for doing their job? In closing, I fully agree that the cost of the VPSO program, since it directly impacts the Alaska Native community, should be borne by the nonprofit corporations versus the state. As it is now, the state is spending funds for the training, and with the funding situation as is, the state can't afford to take on a major expense. However, there must be a mechanism to not only train, certify the VPSO, but to protect them in their job from wrongful employment actions by non-law enforcement while protecting the population from a potential good old boy situation. And thank you, and I'll take any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Coons. Any questions for Mr. Coons? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. The last person I have on the list, unless new names come in, is Mr. Joe Masters. Mr. Masters, are you on the line?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Joe Masters, and I am representing myself, private citizen out of Anchorage now. But I was a public safety commissioner for the past 5 years, and have been in law enforcement for 32 years, and I started my career as a VPSO in the village of Unalakleet before becoming a municipal police officer out on Alaska and then a state trooper for 20 years and then commissioner for 5. In my duties as commissioner, I oversaw the uniformed divisions of the Department of Public Safety as well as oversight of the VPSO program. And I'm one of two commissioners that have been sitting in our positions in oversight of the program when a VPSO was lost in the line of duty. We ask our VPSOs to respond to criminal offenses and acts of law enforcement officers, and they have been for the last 35 years in the most remote communities of our state, with sometimes very little immediate backup, if any. And the types of cases and the types of offenses and incidents these VPSOs respond to are the very same types of incidents that certainly police officers respond to on a daily basis. In those incidents, may begin as benign. They may begin as misdemeanors or violation offenses, and then they escalate very quickly into lethal events, requiring police officers and DPSOs to defend themselves against those offenses. And those types of offenses, when they do occur, don't give DPSOs the luxury of calling for backup or waiting, oftentimes waiting for a trooper to arrive, because they are so immediate and they happen on a moment's notice, and they happen in a manner that don't allow them to retreat. And it's important to note that we've been watching over the last couple of years a very slow but steady increase in the uses of force against police officers and village public safety officers in Alaska. And it's becoming, I don't know if epidemic levels is the right way to characterize it, but VPSOs are experiencing assaults on average of a serious assault about one per month. And if you look over the last couple of years, there have been about 7 incidences involving suspects directly threatening officers with firearms. And certainly one of those resulted in the murder of VPSO Commodore, who was responding to a misdemeanor assault in March of 2013. But prior to that, there was an incident in southwest Alaska where 2 VPSOs were assaulted with a shotgun, and the suspect fired at them, and then one of the VPSOs took ricochet pellets in the face. Very lucky for him that the situation wasn't worse than that. There's another incident up in the northwest Arctic where a VPSO was responding to an intoxicated individual and was back down the street, literally back down the street, with a suspect pointing an AR-15 at him. So the types of offenses against these VPSOs in our communities is escalating. And we saw an increase since 2002 where Alaska police officers were being assaulted 66% higher for lethal or injury assaults, and then non-injury assaults increased by 137%. So the problem is only getting worse. I do want to point out that, you know, the concept of arming a VPSO is not new. And as a matter of fact, when I started as a VPSO back in 1981 or 82, I believe, and VPSOs could be armed. And as a matter of fact, I knew several VPSOs that were armed. And the villages at that time took on the additional liability insurance to make that so. It wasn't until sometime near the middle to late 80s that the practice of allowing VPSOs to be armed ended. I'd also like to point out that police officers are not the only officers or employees in the state that carry firearms as a regular part of their duties. You know, we'd like to think that only police officers carry guns and certified police officers do, but every day, when you look in downtown Anchorage, for example, there's armed security guards that are trained and certified to carry firearms on a daily basis. And, you know, we haven't been hearing any huge amount of incidents or such in regard to that as well. So, but my point is that to think that only certified police officers can carry handguns is, I think, not a very good stance to take, nor would it be accurate to assume that only certified police officers can safely carry firearms in the performance of their duties. I want to point out that three things that we can do to handle this. One is we do nothing and we keep the status quo. Two, to minimize risk to these officers, we stop putting them in the position of being or responding to the types of offenses that could end up taking their lives. Or three, which is the proposed option, is we take the steps necessary to allow VPSOs to be armed. And that's certainly one area that I strongly think is the right way and really the only realistic way to move forward at this point. I had the honor of certainly attending the funeral services of Thomas Padola, and been going through those services, pretty well solidified in my mind that this is the state is at a time now when this must be done. The VPSO program is changing, the demands in the communities are changing, certainly what they're facing is changing, and I realize that I'm probably pushed past my 3 minutes, but you know, I do want to, I'll just end with this, and that is, the reason that you're seeing such broad support for this bill and the companion bill in the House is because simply it's the right thing to do. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll close my remarks and then certainly stay on the line and be available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Masters. And you are way over on time, but I decided you probably still had contacts with folks with lots of lights on the top of their cars, so I didn't think it hurt to get your full message. Questions for Mr. Masters? Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a comment. I would like to thank Mr. Masters for taking time out of his private life to come and testify before this committee. It is a very important issue to rural Alaska. And on behalf of the 62 communities that I represent today, and in the past I've represented probably around 150 communities, I'd like to thank Mr. Masters for all of his public service and his commitment and dedication to public safety for all Alaska. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. Other questions for Mr. Masters or comments? Yeah. Thank you very much for your testimony, and please feel free to also include any written testimony, Mr. Masters. I have no other members of the public signed up to testify. Okay, well, what we're going to do, I wanted to note that the bill fiscal note does include additional liability insurance in the fiscal note on a, if you calculate it on a per armed VPSO basis, it seems to be sufficient. It's hard to say. Also wanted to encourage others for written testimony. My staffer, Lynn Smith, is here, and our purpose today has been fulfilled. It's our first hearing on the bill. Did not intend to pass it out today. We will meet again Thursday at 3:30 p.m. Are there other comments by committee members, or do we just want to wait? Yes, Senator Bishop.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question for the Deputy Commissioner and a comment. The question is, if there was a discharge from a VPSO in an incident, say it resulted in a death or it didn't, can you give me the protocol of what would happen? Would you go out and go through a full field investigation?
Through the chair, Senator, I think regardless whether it was a VPSO or any type of shooting, we're going to respond respectfully and do a full investigation. We take just any type of firearms discharge very seriously, whether it was a hunting issue, fishing issue. But if we had an officer shooting, of course we would investigate, and I think we would owe the public that. I wouldn't even see that as a question to even doubt.
My comment is, if it has any weight, is I would support that the VPSOs get their training in Sitka, where the troopers get their training.
Through the chair, Senator, I thank you for that support, and I still believe at the moment that's the best choice.
I just have this question's relatively unrelated, but has not in the law enforcement part, but of the other duties of the VPSO, is there, do some of the villages have a team approach with CERT training and that sort of training that is free in various communities?
Mr. Chairman, we throughout the year offer a lot of different trainings in different areas on numerous topics, whether it's Department of Public Safety, sometimes the police departments in the small areas offered, and also Alaska Police Standards Council offers training that we allow VPSOs to come in. Reference them being on the you know, special response team. I don't think that we have them officially on the team as one of the special response members, but they do respond with troopers on a regular basis. To calls in hundreds of areas, some of them very serious.
Okay. Any further questions for Mr. Brabeck? No? Thank you very much for being here. Thanks as well, Director Cockrell. If there are no other comments or questions, we are adjourned until 3:30 p.m. It is 4:25.
Thank you, Senator.